May it please the Court, Your Honors, Mr. Yospero, Mr. Bindi, good morning. My name is Mark Bird, and I represent the appellant, Victor Dean, in this morning's hearing. Your Honors, Mr. Dean is currently serving a 10-year prison sentence in the Federal Bureau of Prisons for violation of 18 U.S.C. 922 G1 for being a felon in possession of firearms as a prohibited person. I'll be advancing essentially one argument this morning, and that is that the district court abused its discretion in denying the three motions to reopen proofs and reconsider its earlier denial of his motion to quash arrest and suppress physical evidence. Essentially, this motion was about consent and whether or not the defendant had rendered consent to search his home to locate guns that were ultimately used to charge him in this case. It's our position that the defendant's trial counsel at the time, or counsel for purposes of that hearing, fell below the constitutional standard of effectiveness set forth in the Strickland case and its progeny, and second, that deficient performance did in fact prejudice the defendant in this case. Initially, starting first with the prejudice prong of the case, this case ultimately ended up resulting in a plea of guilty with a reservation of his right to appeal this very issue before the court. Certainly, there is no question that in a case where consent is the only issue, and you are in fact a defendant that is strike one, a convicted felon, which inheres in a 922 G1 charge, and second, an individual with a vested stake or interest in the outcome, two of the factors that the judge in this case, and the district court judge, found to militate against the defendant, all you have left is the third issue, which is credibility of the witnesses. The primary way that you get at the credibility of the witnesses in this case, where you have three law enforcement officers, none of whom are convicted felons, none of whom were individuals that the district court recognized to have a vested stake or outcome in the case, which Judge Reinhardt concluded went to their credibility, all you have left is cross-examination. And in this case, it's our position that the defendant's counsel in this hearing was constitutionally defective both in his preparation and drafting of the motion and brief in support of the motion to quash arrest and suppress evidence, but even more importantly, because he did get to the hearing, his abandonment of cross-examination on several key issues in this case that lend themselves to a discussion or an argument that the officers in this case lack credibility. Those issues, essentially, as set forth in the brief, were when Detective Sebuhar, who was the lead officer at the scene, he testified that the defendant had given a consent orally and that he had possession of the keys to the defendant's dwelling because, as the facts are set forth, the defendant exited through a bedroom window at the time that the police officers arrived at the scene. He had some outstanding traffic warrants. He knew the police were coming, so out the window he went. At that point, Detective Sebuhar indicated he gave oral consent. He said, "We're just here for the guns." Mr. Dean said, according to Detective Sebuhar, "They're in the front closet, go in and get them," and they already had his keys. That becomes important because later on, Detective Sebuhar testifies that they have a department-issued written consent to search form that was not implemented in this case. Detective Sebuhar, when pressed by defense counsel in this issue as to why that form wasn't used, gave a very confusing answer, and at that point, cross-examination was abandoned. Detective Sebuhar said, "Well, it really wasn't feasible because the defendant had tried to run. He told us where the guns were located, and he gave an oral consent." And my point is that should have been explored much further in detail because it just doesn't make sense. It's absolutely feasible when you have a defendant who is in custody at that point, no longer running. Second, if you believe the officers, was completely cooperative to the point where he would say, "They're in the front closet, go on in and get them." And why didn't he give written consent? Why wasn't he presented with that written consent form? And I'm not suggesting that oral consent is invalid, but under those circumstances where credibility is an issue, the officer should have been pressed on that, and he was not.
So is your issue here is that the court abuses discretion in when you became the attorney not to reopen?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so we're not looking at ineffective assistance of counsel at trial. You're looking at the judge abusing its discretion because you raised the issue before him and he overruled your motion.
That's correct. However, it can't be divorced from the ineffective assistance of counsel argument because that was the primary grounds on which we sought to reopen proofs.
But we, you know, those are things we usually do with habeas cases, you know.
I understand, Your Honor, and I discussed that at length with the defendant. However, Judge Reinhardt, in denying the motion, made his ruling on, and it can be found in the government's appendix 105-106, in denying that motion, he did find that counsel was, in fact, effective. To that extent, it seems to be disingenuous to then go back to the same judge on a habeas motion with an undeveloped record versus coming before this court with that. Plus, I understand the rationale for wanting to have that heard in a habeas proceeding so Your Honors would have a more developed record. However, in this case, I think the record is as developed as it can be for purposes of evaluating counsel's performance in prosecuting that particular motion. The other areas in the motion where counsel fell deficient in his cross-examination is there's very little or no questioning about the officer's testimony that keys had been given and consent rendered, yet Detective Wassner, testified that he had to gain entry and all of the officers had to gain entry with him going through what the officers testified to be a broken window, which certainly wouldn't make sense if there were keys. There were no questioning about that at all. There was no questioning because, in addition, even though he wasn't charged with it, the defendant at the time had been packaging, I believe it was 5 or 6 grams of heroin for sale, and it was located spread out on a table in the living room. There was no question, nor was there any argument made to the district court, that that would somehow militate against the defendant giving consent to search, knowing that in addition to the guns, they're going to also find a charge right there on the kitchen table for manufacturing and delivery of a controlled substance, in this case a very serious controlled substance, that being heroin. No questions, no argument made about that.
At that juncture, though, what's the defendant going to do? I mean, he's in handcuffs, and they're... one of the rifles, which he doesn't dispute, are there. Maybe if he had opened the door and something said, "Oh, wait a minute, I'll get you the guns," I don't know how he'd get out of there.
I don't think the officers would allow that.
But. Yeah, but what's he going to do? He wait, say, "Well, I want a written consent or something." Or maybe the idea is don't get the written consent, so at least there's something to argue about afterward.
Well, my point is, if it comes down to the convicted felon with something to gain from the outcome of the motion versus the testimony of 3 officers who are not convicted felons, who presumably don't have a vested interest, though I argued in the district court that they did. Obviously, they want to see an individual that they believe is guilty brought to justice. In that situation, we have to fall back on the defendant, in this case, saying that he did not give oral consent, and the burden that it would put on the officers who have this departmental rights waiver form for consent to search to simply put it before them. You're being cooperative. You said we can go in and get them, sign right here, and then I'm not before Your Honors arguing this point. And the defendant is 99% of the time, I believe, going to lose that credibility argument when he has those 2 strikes against him, especially so without effective cross-examination. And that's where the counsel's performance was deficient. I mean, it's you have to go back to Professor Wigmore's statement. The cross-examination is the most effective vehicle ever invented for the discovery of the truth. As a defense counsel, we are the gasoline that powers that engine. And in this particular case, without effective cross-examination, he was doomed from the get-go and denied constitutionally effective assistance. I see I'm into my rebuttal time. If there are no further questions, I'll sit down at this point.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Michael Osparo on behalf of the United States. The District Court did not abuse its discretion in denying the motions to reconsider and to reopen. Mr. Byrd suggests that the District Court did abuse its discretion because Mr. Sullivan at the suppression hearing stage was ineffective. But simply standing up here and saying that there could have been additional questions asked or more fully developed cross-examination doesn't rise to the level of showing that there was ineffective assistance. Assuming there were additional questions asked, Mr. Byrd hasn't even suggested what the answers to those questions might have been, how they may have changed the outcome of this case. The fact remains that this came down to a credibility determination. Three officers testifying, two of them heard the defendant giving consent, and then the defendant testifying that he did not. In the swearing contest, the district court's determination of whom to believe is important and is something that this court cannot overturn unless there was exceedingly improbable testimony that was credited. Here there was not. The defendant testified he was a multi-convicted felon. The district court was in the best position to determine that credibility. The motions to reconsider and reopen were simply an attempt to get a second crack at the apple. And the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying those motions and suggesting that that Mr. Sullivan was effective. He called two witnesses himself. District court didn't think those were important to the issue of credibility. Mr. Sullivan did cross-examine the officers, and the defendant himself testified. It's as simple as that, and the appellant has simply not been able to establish how Mr. Sullivan was ineffective. So for those reasons, we ask that this court affirm the judgment and find that there was no abuse of discretion. Thank you.
Counsel, is there anything else? 1 minute, please.
Your Honors, in addition to what I've argued this morning in brief, there's also discussion of the memorandum and the preparation of the motion and where that, we believe, was deficient as well. But with respect to Mr. Hesperos' indict that I am not able to show what the answers to questions that were never asked would be, that's a problem inherent in this type of issue. There has to be a point where counsel's performance, especially with cross-examination and trying to establish what questions that were never asked would show, has to run very close to or cross the line of being per se constitutionally ineffective. And we wouldn't be able to demonstrate what would happen in a trial if the classic example, defense counsel falls asleep throughout the trial, what it would have been had he remained awake. However, and I don't remember the case, that has been a situation where it's been held to be per se ineffective. And certainly I cannot tell you what would have happened had those questions been asked, but these are not questions that are just hypothesized. There was actually testimony in the record that merited pursuit of those, especially when the main issue is credibility. For those reasons, we're asking Your Honors to consider a remand to the district court, vacation of the conviction with instructions to grant the motion to reconsider and reopen proofs. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Thank you, Counsel. Court will take the case.
Court appointed.
What, pardon me?
Court appointed.
You were appointed by the court, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, we
thank
appreciate
you very much for your
consideration.
Service.
Thank you.
Thank you kindly.